And this is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3. And we're streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's just about noon, 33 degrees out at the airport, overcast northeast winds of 5 miles per hour. We'll see a high around 36 degrees today. Tonight, cloudy with a low around 24, northwest winds of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday is looking partly sunny with a high around 30 degrees. Sunday is also looking sunny with a high near 30. Coming up, a new mobile app aims to connect scientists and fishermen. And look at the row season that wasn't. That's after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Vice President Kamala Harris is bringing the Biden administration's push for tougher gun control measures to Nashville, Tennessee today. NPR's Asma Khalid reports Harris is making a stop in the city a day after two Democratic members were expelled from the State House.
Two Democratic lawmakers were kicked out of the legislature on Thursday for joining a protest on the House floor over gun laws. President Biden described the move as shocking and undemocratic. And Harris is now in Tennessee to meet with state legislators, young people, and advocates for gun reform. A White House official says she'll make clear what happened in Nashville and also call on Congress to pass an assault weapons ban.
That's NPR's Asma Khalid reporting. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas is responding to a news report that accused him of failing to disclose trips paid for by a conservative billionaire. NPR's Jimena Bustillo reports Thomas says he was advised that he didn't have to report them.
In the statement, Justice Thomas says that he was told that the luxury trips he went on with GOP mega donor Harlan Crow didn't need to be reported in his disclosure forms. He says he has, quote, endeavored to follow that counsel throughout his tenure and always sought to comply with the disclosure guidelines. Thomas also noted that the disclosure guidance is now being changed and he will report similar trips in the future. The ProPublica report renewed calls from Democrats for a code of ethics at the high court. Thomas has faced ethics scrutiny before, including for not recusing himself from cases dealing with the January 6th insurrection, despite his wife's involvement in trying to get officials to overturn the election. Jimena Bustillo, NPR News, Washington.
Cleanup operations continue across many parts of the South and Midwest after a series of tornadoes touched down in recent days. Brandon Tabor with member station KASU reports recovery efforts are underway in Wynn, Arkansas, after a twister ripped through the town last week.
Lynn Blake leads Cross County, Arkansas, where Wynn is the county seat. Blake says the city and county have received support at all levels of government, from other county officials to the White House. He said that after getting over the shock of the moment, the community is now looking to the future.
We've hugged and cried together, and now it's time for us to start rebuilding our community, and we're going to work hard at doing that.
The tornado destroyed Wynn High School, where students had been dismissed early before the tornado hit. They'll finish out the school year at the local community college. For NPR News, I'm Brandon Tabor in Jonesboro.
Wall Street is closed today in observance of Good Friday. Trading resumes on Monday. Stocks across Asia closed higher today. You're listening to NPR News in Washington. The former Prime Minister of Ireland is warning that the Good Friday Agreement that ended decades of violent bloodshed in Northern Ireland must not be renegotiated. Villa Marx reports, at least until a functioning government is established there.
Just days before he meets in Belfast to mark its 25th anniversary with other architects of the historic deal, including Tony Blair and Bill Clinton, former Irish leader Bertie Ahern said he would support a review of the pact, but only if very specific conditions are met. One is that all major political parties must participate in the Northern Ireland government, which has been inactive for 14 months despite a power-sharing arrangement that was developed as part of the 1998 deal. As President Biden prepares to visit Belfast despite an elevated terrorism threat level, Ahern warned of fatal consequences for long-term stability if the Democratic Unionist Party, that wants Northern Ireland to remain in the UK, does not re-engage with its political opponents. For NPR News, I'm Willem Marks in London.
Pope Francis is presiding over the celebration of the Lord's Passion at St. Peter's Basilica on this Good Friday. The 86-year-old pontiff, who is recovering from bronchitis, has kept up a busy schedule for Holy Week. On Thursday, Francis held a Mass of the Lord's Supper at a juvenile prison where he washed the feet of 12 young people. The Vatican says the Pope will not appear at the Stations of the Cross tonight at the Colosseum due to cold weather in Rome. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Rockefeller Foundation, making opportunity universal and sustainable for over 100 years. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. Three Alaska Native tribes have sued to block what they say would be one of the largest gold mines in the world. They argue that federal agencies failed to properly analyze health and environmental concerns for the project in southwest Alaska. Tribes from the communities of Kwikset, Tuluksak, and Bethel filed a federal lawsuit Wednesday. It challenges the adequacy of a 2018 environmental review by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It also challenges issuances of a key permit and lease by federal agencies for the Donlin Gold Project. The backers of the project say the lawsuit is without merit. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of the tribes by environmental nonprofit Earth Justice. It claims the agencies failed to fully analyze potential harms and health impacts from a catastrophic spill and did not provide adequate protection for rainbow smelt, a subsistence food from increased barge traffic related to the project. The lawsuit states the project has received the approvals needed for construction to begin, but the construction has not yet started. Donlin Gold LLC, owned by subsidiaries of Canada-based Nova Gold Resources and Barrick Gold Corp., manages the project. Donlin Gold said in a statement that the federal permitting process was rigorous. The deposit contains 39 million ounces, or 1.1 billion grams of gold, worth close to $80 billion at today's prices. And two conservation groups are suing the Environmental Protection Agency over its alleged failure to finalize standards to protect U.S. waterways from harmful vessel discharges, including those from cruise ships. In a complaint filed in February, Friends of the Earth and the Center for Biological Diversity say that a 2018 Vessel Incidental Discharge Act required by the EPA to develop standards for discharges from ships. The lawsuit seeks an injunction that would require the EPA to issue those rules. Much of the lawsuit focuses on the ballast water that ships take on to provide stability. Friends of the Earth Oceans and Vessels Program Director Marcy Kiever says that when ships take on water in one place and discharge it in another, that can help spread invasive species and diseases.
Unless you have treatment to a level with which gets rid of these invasive species, when your, you know, ship exchanges ballast water, you know, it's an incredible risk, just from invasive species alone, let alone the pathogens you might encounter from ships coming from all over the world into our waters.
An EPA spokesperson declined to comment on the pending litigation. In their lawsuit, the conservation groups say invasive species alone cause more than $9 billion in damage each year to infrastructure for public water supplies, industry, and power plants. But ballast water is only one focus of the lawsuit. Kiever says the groups are also concerned about discharges from scrubbers that reduce ships' air pollution.
The biggest rise in wastewater pollution that we've seen over the last several years is exhaust gas scrubber wastewater, which is, you know, basically the wastewater generated when you use a wet scrubber to scrub your smokestack to comply with international rules for cleaner fuel.
A Coast Alaska investigation published last year uncovered dozens of reports from independent cruise ship monitors alerting state authorities to foamy discharges from ships operated by Carnival Corporation and subsidiaries like Holland America and Princess. Kiefer says those discharges can harm marine life and those that depend on it for sustenance.
So essentially what they've done is converted air pollution into water pollution.
Lawyers for the conservation groups and the EPA are due to appear before U.S. District Judge William Orrick in the Northern District of California in mid-May. And the Skipper Science Partnership connects scientists and fishers all over the state, but received radio silence from the Kodiak Archipelago last year. Now in its third year, KMXT's Brian Venwa reports the program has some incentives to hear from folks with firsthand knowledge of what's happening in the water.
The Skipper Science Partnership is a free program that allows fisherfolk to sign up and report information for scientists right from their phones. Hannah Marie Garcia is the Indigenous Sentinels Coordinator for Aleut Community of St. Paul Island and is one of the folks traveling the state to get folks to sign up. Garcia says the app is a great way for fishers to better legitimize climate observations when presenting to researchers and management entities.
We were hearing from fishermen in various programs across the state that they felt as if they were sharing their observations and their knowledge in public comment periods or in different avenues and felt like they were being dismissed as anecdotal in that process or that their observations or what they're seeing were kind of, you know, one-off.
Whether it's weather data, fish caught or released, or fish depth, they take information to be put into studies later on. Data collected may also be referenced in discussions with management bodies like Fish and Game or the Board of Fish. Kodiak is one of the biggest commercial fishing ports in the country by volume and value, but last year Garcia said they had zero entries from our fleet. Now in its third year, program coordinators are seeking to bolster participation, and that includes paying fisherfolk for the data.
You know, if they just joined and they submit their first observation, they'll get $100. And then throughout the season, that every observation that individuals will submit will count as kind of a raffle ticket.
Participants will then be eligible for a drawing for $500 gift cards. But fishers aren't the only ones who can sign up, and anyone who's out and about can report things like marine mammal sightings. All folks have to do is download their app and upload their findings.
Just download the app, create the account, and you can submit your photographs or any observations, especially because those wildlife photographies really have some great insight, too, in terms of maybe what whales are returning to the region and stuff like that, or marine mammals.
Reports can be made on their app, ISN Skipper Science, and photos have the option to be credited to a photographer or can be submitted anonymously. Garcia says 7 Kodiak residents have already signed up since Comfish last month, and they hope to start receiving reports soon. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venwa.
In other news, Senator Lisa Murkowski recently wrapped up a state tour to meet with Alaskans. She spent time working in Anchorage, including representing the U.S. Senate at the annual Arctic Encounter Symposium in Whittier, where she hosted the Arctic dignitaries. She also took a trip to Bethel. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Coyo has more.
United States Senator for Alaska Lisa Murkowski visited the YK Delta this week.
I haven't been back. In probably about 6 months or so now. I was scheduled to be here in early November, and
she stopped by KYUK to talk about the issues facing rural Alaskans and how she plans to address them. Murkowski traveled on the ice road with Bethel Search and Rescue on Tuesday. The ice road is basically a federal highway used to transport goods and services as well as connect communities. She wanted to better understand how the ice road is maintained and operated to get additional funding for more snow plows and graders in the region. Also on the visit agenda was fish.
We had an opportunity yesterday afternoon to visit with the YKHC Delta Subsistence Regional Advisory Council, the RAC. So to get kind of their update on subsistence issues, primarily the fishing, the salmon crisis that we have out in the region. These types of of one-on-ones with folks to hear directly from them are so important.
Murkowski also met with the Association of Village Council Presidents and ONC leadership.
To hear some of their high priorities, to understand what's going on with workforce shortages and what that means, whether you're in the school system or at the hospital. We visited with the ANSEP kids as well as the juniors and seniors from BRHS.
Access to adequate medical care in the YK Delta is challenging, and federal data reflects this. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, from 2016 through 2018, the maternal mortality rate for American Indian and Alaska Native women was 1.9 times higher than in white women. More than 80% of maternal deaths are preventable, which is why Murkowski says she reintroduced legislation for pregnant women to have access to timely, high-quality care.
This is something to respond to the high rate of maternal mortality and pregnancy-related deaths among Alaska Native women and expecting mothers. So what we're trying to do here is to expand access to care there. That is something that we have just reintroduced.
Late last month, the senator was part of a bipartisan legislation which introduced a bill called the Rural American Health Corps Act. This measure incentivizes and recruits healthcare workers to the state and fills critical needs, including nurse practitioners and physician's assistants.
I had an opportunity yesterday as we were at YKHC to visit with their leadership. And you know, you've got a beautiful new facility there, great care provided, but they need more people in their healthcare workforce. And so all that we can be doing to help facilitate that from a workforce perspective is really significant.
Murkowski is also on the HELP Committee. It deals with health, education, labor, and pensions. That includes veterans' health care. At the beginning of March, Senators Sullivan and Murkowski and Representative Peltola welcomed VA Secretary Dennis McDonough to the state, where he listened to veterans voice their concerns and access to care in rural America.
Part of what we're focusing on right now, working with the VA, is to make sure that a veteran knows what is available to them, and then to make sure that they're able to easily access. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have a VA hospital out here,
right,
but to be able to have the care provided, we call it community care, where you are, and have that be reimbursed through the VA.
Murkowski is also on the Appropriations Committee. She says that means she can direct funds to the region. During the last cycle, she helped provide funding for ecological and salmon monitoring. Murkowski quoted a CHEVAC elder she spoke with at the Regional Advisory Council, or RAC, meeting.
He said, if we don't catch fish, we don't eat.
She says she will tell her colleagues in Washington, D.C. about what food security means and why salmon is a priority.
Because people cannot understand what it means when you come from a community where you do not have a store, when you're paying $7 a gallon to fill up your tank, when you don't have access between your communities 365 days a year, where you have to fly in and out, when your cost of living is such, if you don't have fish, you don't eat.
In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
The Togiak Sac Row herring fishery used to draw hundreds of fishermen, and it's Alaska's largest herring fishery. But as the market for roe has shrunk, the remote fishery has become financially unfeasible, and no commercial fishing will take place this spring. Now, as KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, the state's marketing branch is looking to the North Atlantic for ideas about how to help Alaska's industry.
Commercial herring fishing in Togiak used to be gangbusters.
It was like a gold rush.
Frank Woods lives in Dillingham and started fishing for Togiak herring in the mid-1980s.
The whole bay would fill up with industry. It would be a buzz. Everybody would gear up to go, and everybody had not only fun doing it, but made money at it.
Fast forward to 2018, and Woods was the only gillnetter in the fishery.
Going from that huge industry to down to one boat, I never imagined that even possible, let alone, like now, no fishing at all, to where there's no market for it, and nobody's targeting and changing that for us.
Processing companies in Alaska primarily sell herring to Japan, which used to have a big market for the roe. But as Japanese traditions shifted, that market shrank, and the price for herring dropped. For years, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute has worked to increase demand for herring in the U.S. The state bought a herring fillet for processors to use, and it's tried to promote the culinary delights of the fish, hosting Alaska Herring Week 3 years in a row, and working with chefs to develop recipes. But the demand for Alaska herring hasn't budged significantly. And this year, processors opted out of Togiak.
You can only lose money for the fun of it for so long.
Bruce Schachtler was a longtime herring fisherman and now directs ASME's food aid program.
We've continued over time to lose more and more buyers out of Togiak and herring buyers in general across the state. So, and what that really tells you is there ain't very much money in it.
That's why last year, Schachtler and others at ASME published a report, the Alaska Herring Market Recovery Project. It said the goal was to bring new perspectives to an industry stuck in the 1980s. Examining European fisheries in the North Atlantic, Schachtler found that fleets fish for herring throughout the year, so processors get a lot of different products based on when the fish are caught. Herring from the North Atlantic are used to make fish meal and oil, but also for canning, pickling, and smoking.
They catch the fish in Norway, they ship it to Germany or Denmark, they smoke it, they can it, and next thing you know, you're buying it in Trader Joe's in Seattle. My question has always been, well, can we catch these big herring in Alaska? Can we catch them in the wintertime in some of these other places when they have a different meat quality from the spawning phase? And then can we do something with them?
Schachtler says in order to market herring successfully, the American fishing industry needs to figure out something new to sell. But he says so far they haven't seen strong interest in doing so. And there are some key differences between herring fisheries in Alaska and in the Atlantic. For one, the European fisheries are much closer to a big slice of their market, while Alaska processors have to ship fish much further away. And he says herring fisheries in the North Atlantic are much bigger.
Some of the boats they're fishing will bring in 10 million pounds aboard. They'll have a big week up there fishing, and they'll catch 35,000 tons in just a week.
The report also highlights opportunities in the industry. Some European herring stocks lost their sustainability certification from the Marine Stewardship Council in 2020. And the report says that creates openings for other fisheries to win new customers. Schachtler says in order for things to change, management has to shift. Right now, Alaska's herring fisheries are largely managed to harvest sack roe. But to get fish with higher oil content, for example, they have to harvest them in the fall.
If you don't change, Fish and Game doesn't change management, then you don't have access to those fish for those particular products that you're going to try to address in some section of the market. Management has to change if anything else is going to change in any significant manner.
For this spring, Togiak's herring run will return to spawn, unharvested by a commercial fleet. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
The unemployment rate fell in March. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The Labor Department's unemployment rate edged down to 3.5% last month as the economy gained 236,000 jobs. That's about what analysts were expecting. The gain comes despite a decline in the number of job openings and could leave room for the Federal Reserve to further raise interest rates. An Associated Press poll finds a majority of Americans oppose changes to Medicare and Social Security. The programs are forecast to be short of money by the end of the decade. 58% of those polled support raising taxes on higher-income households to shore up the programs. Mortgage rates are down for the fourth week in a row. Freddie Mac says the average 30-year fixed rate last week fell to about 6.3%. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by KeyBank. Learn more at key.com/healthcare trends.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the April 7th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. I hope you've been in a spot to see the moonrise the past couple of nights. Huge orange ball coming up over the horizon. Thursday night, it disappeared behind some clouds, but on Wednesday, it glowed a beautiful golden color for a long time after it rose. Lovely stuff. We are rapidly heading into a time of year where truly dark skies don't exist at our latitude. By the end of April, we'll go from nautical twilight to astronomical twilight, with no nighttime in between. By about May 22nd, even astronomical twilight has disappeared, as the days get longer and longer. We won't see true nighttime again until mid-August. What does that all mean? Well, those deep, dark skies we enjoy during winter nights, the ones where there are a bazillion stars in the sky and they seem to go on forever and ever, those dark skies are going to be gone in another couple of weeks. The sky is already getting bright enough that seeing a good northern light show is unlikely until fall. Not impossible, but certainly less likely. Tonight, you can have a fun-filled evening starting with the First Friday Art Walk. Information is on the KodiakArts.org website. Then head on over to the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium for the Outdoor Film Festival. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and the films start at 7. And after the films get your adrenaline and dreams of adventure going, head on down to Tony's Bar to hear some great music by Crooked Island and Ellamy Tiller and the Twang. If you miss the music tonight, you can catch Drew Sablon, followed by Ellamy Tiller and the Twang on Saturday at Tony's 2. All of these events support local nonprofits and artists. Do your part and have some fun at the same time. See you there. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. It's just before 12:30. Friday, April 7th, the year is 2023. In case you forgot, sunrise today is 7:21 a.m. Sunset tonight will be at 9:03 p.m. That gives us 13 hours and 43 minutes of daylight, a gain of just under 5 minutes, 4 minutes and 58 seconds. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:18 a.m. Record high for today was 56 degrees back in 1963. Record low was a very chilly 9 degrees in 1924. Looking over at our marine weather, from Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, there's a small craft advisory tonight and Saturday. Today, northeast winds of 15 knots, seas to 4 feet. Tonight, north winds of 25 knots, seas to 7 feet. And Saturday, northwest winds of 30 knots, seas to 9 feet with freezing spray. Looking at the Shelikof, there's a gale warning Saturday. Today, north winds of 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. Tonight, north winds of 15 knots, becoming northwest winds of 25 knots after midnight, seas to 4 feet, building to 6 feet after midnight with freezing spray. And for Saturday, northwest winds of 40 knots, seas to 10 feet and freezing spray. We have some time for community announcements. Pam covered it, but in case you missed it, don't miss Spring Twang. That's Friday, April 7th. That's tonight. And tomorrow, Saturday, April 8th, at Tony's Bar, featuring live music from Crooked Island, Drew Sablon, Ellamy Tiller, and the Twang. Tickets are available online at kmxt.org and here at the station. That's 620 Egan Way. Proceeds go to support KMXT and all of Kodiak Public Broadcasting. You can also visit the Aleutic Museum today from 5 to 7 p.m. for April's First Friday Art Walk. This month's theme is Aleutic Seal Artists in Action. We'll be hosting seal artist Hannah Scholl and Cassie Rowland with her daughter Bailey. Watch the artists create and ask questions about their work. And a reminder that Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival is also tonight. That's Friday, April 7th. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Films start at 7 o'clock. That's at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium at the high school. You can also become a member of Island Trails Network at the event. And Volunteer of the Year Awards, hosted by the Kodiak Community Foundation. You can send a name or a shortened statement about why you are nominating an individual. The selected volunteer will be awarded $1,000 to give to the Kodiak nonprofit of their choice. You can email nominations to Carrie Irons at Gmail, Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-Y-I-R-O-N-S at gmail.com. The new deadline is April 14th. That's coming up. And one last one. Galley Tables has an evening of music and storytelling on Saturday, April 15th at St. Mary's Gym. This month's theme is Fool's Rush In. There should be some really good tales around that. Seven storytellers have 7 minutes each to tell their story. The music starts at 7 p.m. and the stories start at 7:30 p.m. Don't miss this great, heartwarming, funny, and fun community event. Donations accepted but not required.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Spotlight is brought to you in part by Creighton Chiropractic Clinic, offering chiropractic care and massage therapy in a peaceful, relaxing, and beautiful atmosphere. Located at 814 Resinoff Drive across from the high school, 487-9798, Creighton Chiropractic Clinic. We got your back.